sense of morality. I mean, when in the last two presidential races, every one of them is like 50.7%, 49.7%. So really, it's a representation of where we are morally. If you look at what the guys, Trump and Obama stand for, and that is a reflection of the kind of people that exist in this country. And same is true for the church. The spiritual leaders of the church of my first experiences in a young adult group. I didn't have many young adult years. I went to college in a short young adult season, and I got married. But I remember moving from Sacramento, Los Angeles, and visiting one of my first young adult groups. And this is very interesting to think about this. This is in 1998, okay? But it's almost no different. It's 20 years later when I think of how a young adult group can be. It was a potluck party, and there's a lot of guys, a lot of girls there, and the guys, it was ball game season, the guys watching the ball game, their eyes are like literally glued to the tube, and there's other media stuff, there's other guys who didn't care about the game, and they were playing their own game, video games, and so it's interesting that all the guys were there early, and then I see the girls, the ladies coming in, and they're like literally lugging in appetizers and fried noodles and crock pot stew, and all the guys are just sitting there. Not a guy moved to even help one of the gals bring in stuff. And the things that the guys brought was very interesting. They brought the video games, they brought the chips, and they brought the dip. And that's all the guys did. And I'm not saying this is like what our ministry is like, but they have guys that go way beyond that. But this is like what I experienced. I'm like, wow, this is very interesting. The girls are haggard and tired because they're slaving over fresh food. And I'm like, it's not much different 20 years later. That guys can be like this and girls are working in this way. But it just made me think, wow, that's kind of sad. And then I remember moving on from school and in the dot-com era in the early 2000-2005. Guys were just very good at making a lot of money and working really, really hard. And so they were very good in the area of provision. But where they lacked was the area of being a prophet and priest in their home. Yeah, they made hundreds of thousands of dollars in the Silicon Valley of the West. And guess what? Yeah, I understand this is becoming the Silicon Valley of the East here. Are we becoming that way? Well, we're making big bank for neglecting our family as priest and prophet. Those are things to think about 15 years later. So I'm going to make this really simple for all of us. We're going to look at an acronym, CALL, C-A-L-L, and we're just going to just walk through what it looks like to confirm leaders, look at their abilities, the type of heart, the longings, and also the lifestyle necessary to be a man who's growing into biblical leadership, and for us to practically recognize who these people are and encourage toward that end. So the first one, C, confirmation. I totally believe without a doubt, it's not the seminary, but it's really God working through a local church that grooms men into leadership. Okay? There are opportunities for men to serve constantly, to teach, to lead, even informally. Every time you make a decision, like what movie we're going to go to, a guy has an opportunity to say, let's choose this movie because it's better than this movie. Watching fornication on TV or on the movie theaters. You have choices. You can watch, you know, I Only Could Imagine or The Apostle Paul, or you can watch something raunchy, right? There's choices you can make in the midst of your conversations or your choices, guys. That's the first one. the local church has have opportunities. And we see in 1 and 2 Timothy, we see the laying of hands for those who are clearly servant leaders in life of church. You see it listed three times. And so in Timothy's case, the elders laid their hands upon him, identifying him as a leader in life of the church. And I think in a normal church, a healthy church, it becomes very obvious. This guy, God is working through. And when I look out in this room, there are guys here that are on this track. Guys that are growing, guys that are hungry, guys that want to serve, guys that are stepping up. And just, as a church, we need to recognize that together and encourage that. And I don't think we need to wait for guys to be in their 40s and 50s to be elders and deacons. Seriously, I think guys in their 20s and 30s could be deacons for sure, and possibly elders in their 30s. I know guys in the elder, who are elders in their 20s. And this is okay. There's not, it doesn't give an age in here. But there isn't. I've been looking back and forth. There's no age qualification. We also see that there is, particularly for aspires to the office of overseer. It's a noble task that he desires. And so we see a couple words, desire and aspire. Both refer to a holy ambition, to know God, to love God, and to see God's gospel advanced. This idea of to reach out or to stretch out or to grasp not just something, in this case, the gospel, and to carry out the cause of the gospel through his church. It's no different than maybe an athlete, an Olympic athlete or track athlete that is running 100 meter yards and then is running down super, super fast. And at the very end, what do? Stretch out, either their hand, their head, or sometimes I see skaters, they stick out their foot to get across the line. It looks really awkward. That they might hurt themselves or something, but that's the idea of stretching out. And then lastly, we're talking about lifestyle. And so this business of hey, I'm going to want a lifestyle consistent to God's word and these spiritual qualifications. And as we look through them, each one of these, they need to be evident in the life of an elder, and the church needs to be able to confirm these things on one side. That's the positive side. These qualifications. The other side would be we need to be concerned where it's negative or obviously flagrant. Okay, obviously flagrant. And then if it's a consistent pattern of flagrant conduct, then we have what I would call a problem that needs to be addressed very unique, very specifically. So let's begin with the first one. The first characteristic that we see in the life of this passage is he is to be blameless. Okay, this doesn't say he needs to be perfect. It says he needs to be blameless. The word blameless comes sometimes translated with the word above reproach. And it refers to having handles. Okay? Why handles? Really, a godly man shouldn't have anything you can grab onto and say, this is an issue with this guy. Okay? There's nothing you can accuse him with. There's no handles to grab onto. Okay? Bigger the handle, worse the problem you have with this particular. There's sometimes there's little handles we can recognize them. Those need to be addressed and repented of. And this really reminds me of a baseball player. A baseball player, at the end of the year, some of them win gold gloves because, why? They use their glove in such a way and made very few errors in playing the field. The same token, a Christian is supposed to live in such a way. There's very few errors they conduct themselves as a Christian where they're not flagrant sin in their lives. Number two, he's to be a husband of one wife. This is probably the hardest one to interpret. Really, you can probably do one whole sermon on this, but I'm going to try to give you the most high points to understand this phrase, husband of one wife. Okay? Literally, the text reads in the Greek, a one-woman man. Okay, Paul's not referring to marital status. Okay, so you got to get that out of your mind. He's not referring to marital status in this case because there's no definite article in the original text. Rather, he's referring to sexual behavior or moral or sexual purity. Is this man, whether married or not married, honor God in this area of his life? So here are some of the key areas to think about along these lines. Paul is not disqualifying widows or single men for the office of elders, or else Paul would have been disqualified himself. Two, Paul isn't requiring only married men to be elders. Jesus wasn't married, so that won't work out there. Number three, if he is married, though, he must be loving toward his wife and devoted toward his wife and manage his household well. We see that latter part of this passage. Next week, Elder Don will be preaching on the next few verses. Number four, for sure this means if he is married, he must be a one-woman man, married to one woman, okay? He's not to be married to a man. He's not meant to be married to his transgender. He's not to be married to other multiple women. And also, this is the more subtle or more dangerous one. He's not to have a mental or emotional or visual affair through lust or pornography or maybe just relating to another lady in the office or therefore forbid all remarriages after divorce. Matthew chapter 5, verses 31-32 and 19:9, the Lord permitted remarriage when a divorce was caused by adultery. Paul gave a second occasion when remarriage is permitted, when an unbelieving spouse initiates the divorce, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 15. While God hates divorce, Malachi chapter 2, verse 16, God is gracious to the innocent party in those two situations. Since remarriage in and of itself is not a sin, it is not necessary to blight a man's character. If divorce resulted from a man's inability to lead his family, however, then it is a disqualification. So I think that captures most of the different scenarios of what it means to be a one-woman man. Others have asked why did Paul give this as a first criteria after, as a specific criteria after above reproach or blameless. And many have speculated, and it makes sense. Most men in ministry are disqualified in this area right off the bat for sexual immorality. And I think he puts it right up in the forefront to say, hey, pay attention. I mean, literally, pastors drop like flies. I don't know if it's a stretch to say every day, but it happens enough. It happens enough on a regular basis. And the church, we need to work together, I would say, with your pastors and elders to prevent this from happening as much as humanly possible. Number three is to be sober-minded. This word is translated temperate or clear-headed. This person is sensible. This person is not a knucklehead. This person is like a soldier. He's alert. He's watchful. He's vigilant. And really, you know, he's on red alert at all times. He's aware of what's going on and what might harm him and what might harm others. This person is self-controlled. Number four, this person is not impulsive, whether emotionally or even impulsive reacting to different doctrines. This person thinks biblically, is a rational thinker. This person is prudent. He's well-disciplined in the sense of being ordered to order his life around the gospel, around biblical priorities and kingdom priorities, and make sure the main thing are in place in his life and sees everything else as secondary. He's able to look at life through the lens of the Bible. And in light of that, the reality is the fact that people are lost and need the gospel desperately. He's a man who's gripped with eternity. He's sensible and self-control in that sense. Number five, this person is respectable. This word comes from the Greek word cosmos. Respectable comes from the idea of orderly. It's the same word we get in our solar system to describe the cosmos. We have an orderly solar system that spins the planets around in order. And so, in other words, this person's life is to be in order, not chaos. It's not to have a chaotic lifestyle. He can't manage his own life. No way he's going to be able to manage the church, or it will be chaos. Number six. This one rocked my world, kind of broke me up a little bit. But the word hospitable is a Greek word, it's a compound word, to love strangers. So literally to love strangers. And frequently throughout the New Testament, hospitality is commanded. And it is not referring to entertaining your friends, your relatives, your family members. This is to love strangers. Pretty much every church I've ever been at is very good with practicing eating together with family and friends. We do that very, very well. What we don't do so well is loving strangers. Loving strangers. And I thought about this and spent some time reflecting and said, when have I loved strangers? It's definitely not been since I've gone to North Carolina much. I try to talk to our neighbors and get to know them. But seriously, this is, I remember the time the Lord really, stuck this to me. And I tried to make a lot of efforts during different seasons. I remember toward the end of my seminary weeks, I would say, okay, I'm done studying. legislation where elders got so mad, they got up, they grabbed the flagpole, which I don't see one here, and they literally stabbed each other with the flagpole until the police were called. Another church, I heard the elders got out of the room, went to the parking lot, and started decking each other in the face. And so that's pretty serious, all right? But I would say, even in our own church, we have not gone to blows, physical blows, physically. We have definitely seen verbal blows from the voice. And then, you know, when you think through it, it goes from verbal blows to physical blows. Those are the seeds to the next thing. In contrast, this man is to be gentle and considerate, forbearing, gracious, not quarrelsome, argumentative. And the flip side is to be peaceful and reluctant to fighting. I know guys who want to fight every single issue, and it's like, gosh, this is seriously not a major doctrine. You're literally fighting over the carpet color. You're fighting if we're going to wear ties or not. Jesus would never wear a tie. I want you to know that. I heard this one seminary literally tied a tie and statue of Jesus to make a point one day. This is not worth fighting over. He's not a lover of money. He's not consumed with money. If he has a lot of money, he understands this is an opportunity to extend God's kingdom. So, few applications. One, elders are to advance the gospel. I think we have a nice slide on that. Really, elders, we understand that God is a God of mission of the gospel. And elders, deacons are to lead the charge. And members are to be part of extending, leading this charge into the culture, into the network of relationships you're in. This is, I believe, the biblical pattern and design. It's not the other way around. I want you to know, our practice and our constitution and our policies must follow the scriptures. Has to. You can't go the other way around. Once you go the other way around, you cease to become a church that's biblical. And if it's not a church that's biblical, you might as well say, I don't want to really be a part of a church that's biblical. Number two, Jesus Christ is the only one who perfectly qualified himself to be the sacrifice to save sinful man, unqualified people like you and me. And so he gave his life as a ransom for many. Single ladies, I want you to know that Jesus Christ has already ascended into heaven, and the fourth person of the Trinity does not exist, so you need to be comfortable that you can't marry Jesus, but a godly guy, that is someone you can marry. I don't know if we have that culture in this church. I know girls are so picky, like, seriously, Jesus is already gone, and he's not coming back till later on. Youth, younger men, begin now. Remember your Creator when you are young and seek to have a holy ambition to be a godly man now. Seriously, you have choices. For seniors that are graduating and have all these choices in school, pick a school where you know there's a serious church you can go to. That's the least you can do. Don't go to a barren place where there's no decent biblical church in your area. That'd be almost spiritual suicide. You want to grow in the season. Seniors are going off to college. Older men, don't check out. Don't say I've been there and done that. Find some young men to disciple. Mentor. Mentor the next generation. And understand this, all men. God does